Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, joined once again by Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
Interesting discussion, talking about the specifics of a trust for your surviving spouse.
Yeah.
Got into that last week, and you want to kind of review a little bit about the revocable trust and how that works and some other benefits.
Yeah. So last week we spent a lot of time in just building the foundation of what it means to use a revocable living trust in a manner that will protect your spouse. So in other words, when one spouse dies, how do we leave things for the best benefit of the surviving spouse? And we talked about three major things that we need to balance between them, which is the power to the surviving spouse, the benefit of all the assets to the surviving spouse, and the tax consequences to the surviving spouse. And I said that you can never have all three of those simultaneously. One of them must be compromised in order to achieve the other two. So, for example, if we were to use a will plan, then typically the most common will says, hey, if I die, give everything to my spouse. And in that scenario, we typically have assets titled jointly. So we have our house joint, we have our checking account joint, we have our 401ks or IRAs where our spouse is our beneficiary. So ultimately, everything goes to the surviving spouse. Now, that marks off the first two, which is the surviving spouse will have full and absolute control of all those assets because they go into his or her name and under their social security number. That is full absolute control. They will have the full benefit because they have control. They determine how it's going to be utilized. So they have the full benefit, but we never did any tax mitigation. So the tax mitigation piece was completely at zero. Why? Because the other two were at 100%. So is it possible to leave the spouse in full absolute control, give them the full absolute benefit, and have full absolute tax planning? The answer is unfortunately no. And so one of those must be compromised. Now, notice how I said compromised, not fully eliminated. And in most times, we use a family trust. So that's what happens is when one spouse dies, their portion, the decedent's portion of community property plus any individual property, such as an inheritance or if they brought something into the marriage and it always stayed their property, those assets go to what we call as a family trust. It could be known as a safe harbor trust, a bypass trust, an AB trust. All of these names mean exactly the same thing. It means the first spouse to die, they set up a trust, and typically the most common thing to do is that it's set up for the benefit of the surviving spouse. Sometimes it's also set up for the benefit of children, but I like to only do that in certain scenarios, specifically if we have a child who has a special needs or other family members that really need that financial support. Even when we do that, we try to run everything through the permission of the surviving spouse so that that surviving spouse has the ultimate say. All right. So in standard tax planning, what happens is that we reduce the power and control just a little bit of the surviving spouse, leaving them as the full beneficiary. Again, we could add family members as beneficiaries, but only through the permission of the surviving spouse. And then we can start raising the tax planning. And so now we've got all three of those firing simultaneously, and they're starting to work collectively and in unison instead of one being at the ground floor zero, such as when we use a will. There's no tax planning, and so that's at an absolute zero. So there is a mix, and through good education, through good counseling with an attorney, discovering where your barometer is, where you want to be along the way between those three, that's our job. As a matter of fact, I've had clients come in with rare exception and say, actually, the control piece that you're talking about, Paul, that we have to actually reduce in order to start getting the tax planning fired up, we don't like it. Okay, no problem. So then we'll go back and we will utilize the trust as more of a control and benefit package for the surviving spouse and mitigate or not really put in a lot of the tax saving clauses.
Yeah, I was going to ask, when the first spouse dies, is there going to be a lot of tax that's due right then, or is, can it still be postponed until both people die? Or?
Yeah, so there's a thing called an unlimited marital deduction. Mm-hmm. And so marital, we're married, right? And the word unlimited, so that means I can transfer any amount of money to my spouse at any time I want and have no tax consequence. And so that can be a full absolute transfer to my spouse and there's no tax. As a matter of fact, what people don't realize is that when they use a will or when they use a joint asset, that's actually the law that they're taking advantage of. It's just that no one's ever explained it to them and they don't, oftentimes they don't file tax returns or do other things appropriately. We talked about that at the end of last show, which is plans are only as good as if they're administrated. But if I were to die and have my wife as the beneficiary of absolutely everything I have, and I was over a tax threshold, my spouse will not pay a tax because we're taking advantage of this unlimited spousal exemption. Hmm. Okay. It's exempt because I gave it to my spouse and it's unlimited. Hmm. I could transfer $50 million to my spouse and there's no tax consequence. Now, all the tax consequence builds in her estate then, because that's the theory, is that as a society, we want people to take care of their own. So therefore, if I give everything to my spouse, she's able to take care of herself better and she's going to spend it. And at the end of her life, we're going to tax it all. But we miss the opportunity to do any tax mitigation. So we can create a plan absolutely in any fashion, in any manner that you desire, that you determine is in your best interest and in your spouse's best interest. So the family trust is typically created with a minor reduction in power, full benefit, and we can also benefit the family if we needed to, but only with spousal permission, and we begin the tax savings clauses. So actually, again, all these three are beginning to act in unison. They're acting as a concert together, and now we can start creating a really good plan to make sure that everyone is well taken care of during their lifetime. So this is the basis of how a revocable living trust would work when things are put into a family trust. But there's also many other things that we could do as well with that trust. We don't. I've seen plans where because the surviving spouse did not have much ability to manage assets well. As a matter of fact, she had never managed assets in her life. Anything that was given to her, she would likely spend. And unfortunately, there were some addiction concerns that the family had. Mm. Okay, so if all of those factors are true, and by the way, this has nothing to do that in this storyline, it was actually a surviving wife. This could be the storyline for a surviving husband too, to where the wife took care of everything and managed the whole family. Trust me, I know plenty of wives that manage the household with finances. And so in this type of a plan, we needed to make sure that the surviving spouse in this case did not have much control, because no ability to really manage money, not the skill set. And by the way, just because someone doesn't have the skill set doesn't make them a bad person. Hmm. It just means that they don't have the skill set. So we can bring in appropriate assistance, appropriate help. And typically it's going to be an adult child who steps in. If that's not appropriate because of blended marriages or other reasons, then we can bring in professional assistance. There's many things, or cooperative assistance. There's many things that we can do to actually buffer a surviving spouse who may not have the skill set or the desire even. And that's the other thing, is that this surviving spouse really, at the end of the day, said, I don't even want to do it, okay, because I'm used to someone else assisting me. They were actually very happy to get the assistance. So there are times to when it's actually inappropriate to leave all power and control in the hands of the surviving spouse. What if the surviving spouse was already having memory issues and dementia issues? Well, everybody would raise their hands and go, well, clearly they should not be managing their money. Mm-hmm. And so there are many good reasons to why the power and control function need to be diluted, and it's actually not offensive. So we have a real problem with power and control.
Right.
Okay? And part of this scheme is because we were created in the image of our Heavenly Father, who is in full control, who has absolute power, and created in that image is supposed to lead us to having a part of that characteristic. But it becomes unhealthy when we want to control it all. As a matter of fact, in our Christian faith, we're supposed to be submissive unto Him and submissive unto His goodness and who He is. And that part of our lives is supposed to become more well-balanced. But unfortunately, as we all know, we watch many believers who love Jesus, who are clearly born again, and still struggle with being in control. It's not a problem. I understand that. And so, again, it's finding this balance of what does it look like for you to be able to mitigate a little bit of control and begin to take advantage of those tax savings, and yet be able to take advantage of all of the assets for each other, because that long term is typically the best plan. Doesn't have to be that way. We'll get to that next. But number one, there are clear and obvious situations where a family trust can actually protect the surviving spouse, because they may not be able to manage that. They may not be able to have the skill set. They may not have the mental capacity. They may not even want to manage it. And so when we have those circumstances, we're able to step in and actually create a plan that will protect the surviving spouse long term, so that they can take advantage of what was left behind and yet alleviate them from that burden and necessity.
Creating that trust for the surviving spouse, it's a very loving thing to do and an appropriate thing to do, but you do need to plan.
That's
right. Maybe the first step is calling Paul Grant. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, which is a great way to start the relationship, and ways to communicate with us. So head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. I will be presenting a half-day session on faith and finances, irresistible generosity. In this session, I will walk us through what it looks like to apply our faith over our finances in a biblical manner so that we can accomplish kingdom purposes. We all deal with finances in one way or another, so let's find out how this journey of faith applies to our money. Faith and Finances will be presented on Saturday, July 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., graciously hosted by Venture Church in Mill Creek. There's no cost to attend, so join me on Saturday, July 16th for Faith and Finances, Irresistible Generosity. You can find more information at legacyandfaith.com and sign up for this Faith and Finances opportunity.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswordtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswordtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Paul is leading us through how to create that trust for the surviving spouse, a very loving thing to do, to
yes,
take care
is.
Of your spouse. And one question I had is, you seem to be getting at this idea of kind of half is in the one spouse's name, half is in the other.
Right.
What about putting it all just in one trust?
Yeah, good. And so so there's two consequences depending on which trust we're talking about. Because if I were to die, then my wife Mariana has a trust. She gets to retain her portion of community property under her full and absolute control. And then my portion of community property goes into my trust, and that becomes irrevocable. Now, tax law says that we can only move up to half of the estate into the family trust, so into the decedent's trust. So we have a tax issue that if we're going to use that bucket for tax mitigation, which is what one of the objectives typically is, then we cannot put everything over because tax law says you're only allowed to put half in. Now, then we get into the secondary part of community property, which says that I'm only allowed to control up to half. So, therefore, both sets of law say I am not allowed to move my spouse's portion into a trust. That's hers. So I don't have any legal authority to say where that goes. So now, what if my wife says, fine, I'll use my authority over mine to throw it over to Paul's section because that's irrevocable. We've got tax planning over there, and we have protection issues over there. Well, she's not allowed to do that because as soon as she adds her money to my trust, then it becomes what is known as a self-settled trust. My wife put her self-money into my irrevocable trust, and it's going to break the taxing schemes, and it's going to break the irrevocability of that trust because she adds her money. So therefore, she's required to keep her portion, and I can only move up to half of my money. Now, let's reverse that. What if I just say, well, I'm going to give half of my money back to my spouse and let her have control? That's fine. I could actually do that. As a matter of fact, that's called a will. We, in a will scenario, we give all the money back to the surviving spouse. So I am allowed to direct the money wherever I want it to go. So I could move half of it back, but then I didn't take full advantage of the protections or the tax structuring because my wife is now in control of some of my money. Not a problem. Maybe she needed that. As a matter of fact, when she were to take advantage, or if she were to take advantage of actually utilizing some of the money I've set aside for her, because remember, I haven't taken anything from a spouse. We've only separated the assets. And my trust says, baby, I love you so much. Go, you can use my money anytime you want. As a matter of fact, I really need to write that into a trust one day. I might even write it into mine. So now if she comes and utilizes some of the assets of my trust, that's really what she's doing. She's taking it from my irrevocable trust and she's putting it back into her revocable I control it trust. And now the tax consequences have been destroyed over that portion of money. Not a problem because obviously she had a good reason to go and use it. That's why the trust is there, is to allow her full accessibility. But typically, we don't want to be mixing these two trusts. One stays revocable, one becomes irrevocable, and that's the end of the storyline. Unless my wife utilizes the authority to go and utilize some of what I've left her, now she moves that portion to her revocable trust where she has full control again, and she's financially stable, emotionally stable because she has money, whatever that meant to her. That could be a lot of money. That could be a little bit of money. But I can't control the emotional stability of what a surviving spouse needs to see in their checking account or their savings account in order to feel that emotional stability. So we never want to mix these buckets. When we create them properly, they need to remain as separate buckets, but my surviving spouse can get at it.
So what other kinds of instructions can be put into that family trust? You have a note here, principal versus income.
Yeah.
And something you also call T.
Yeah, well, trustee is what that's a short version for trustee. But so, yeah, let's talk about principal and income. There are a lot of tax tricks that we can put into this trust. Unfortunately, most trusts that I review do not have these in them. So this sounds like a great plan. This sounds like it's easily done. I am now going to start talking about things that my office does that I rarely see in other trusts. So unfortunately, when I talk about things on the radio or when I talk to potential clients, they may walk away thinking that another attorney is going to be able to provide all these different services. Some can, yes, because they specialize and they focus in on estate planning. And there's many good estate planning attorneys out there. There are some that do it on the side or do not focus. And these technicalities or these type of tax tricks may not be readily available in a template or other document that they use. When we talk about the principal, what that means is that's the money that was put in and is growing before we actually have to use it as claim it as tax. So, for example, if I left my wife $1 million because that's just a nice, easy round number, and she did not use that money, she invested that money because she would have the right in the system to invest that money and work with a financial advisor of her choice. That money begins to grow even in over time. Almost all markets grow, so it's okay. Take a deep breath when markets go down. So markets traditionally grow over time. So let's say 5 years down the road, just a simple 3% return. She wasn't highly invested. I don't even know what that means. That's three. Let's say that with 3%, that's what that'd be $30,000 per year. So now she's got $1.1 million. Okay. Now, none of that's been taxed yet because it's been growing. That's the same way that if you invested your own money and you bought Microsoft stock and you don't cash out Microsoft, you don't get taxed on that until you actually begin to cash it out and take advantage of it. That becomes capital gains. Now, if you invested in a company that actually has dividends, that would be taxable each year. And whatever. So the same system applies in a trust. My wife can invest it in companies that grow, and some companies may give interest, dividends, or royalties. Well, she would be taxed on that every year. Not a big deal. But the principal is the amount that keeps growing that is never taxed. Okay? So it increases in value, but it has not been taxed yet. Now, we can set up a structure with principal. Most of them, by the way, just say take care of my spouse only, because most married couples do not want to start giving their money away to their kids until both of them are done utilizing it. So most people don't do that. There are reasons to do it, but again, most individuals are, I want to take care of my spouse in full. So the principal, the bulk of the money would go to the a spouse for their care. Again, it's an IRS alignment. It's called an ascertainable standard. It's health, education, and maintenance. Maintenance is the lifestyle that you're accustomed to living. So in other words, and then we define that as being liberal to the surviving spouse. So if it's liberal, can the surviving spouse take a cruise? Absolutely. As a matter of fact, for many of you, you already take cruises. Well, at least you are now again. You weren't allowed to for a while, but now we are allowed to again. And so that wouldn't even be liberal lifestyle. That would be your lifestyle. So could you use the irrevocable money versus your money? Yes, absolutely. So the principle then is used for the surviving spouse. Let's get to the income really quick. What would the income do? Well, the income has to be taxed. So now we can add a layer in there that says, at the discretion of my spouse, of my surviving spouse, he or she can give that income to him or herself, or you can give it to any of the kids. Now, why would we do that? Because our children typically have different tax brackets and compared to me, because they're much younger. So what if it was better holistically for the family if I actually took some of that income and gave it to my kids each year, and they paid the tax because now they're getting the benefit of it instead of me paying a higher tax bracket. Mm. So what it does is it sets up the family unit to look at the whole family holistically to discover where is the best tax consequence for that income each year. If the surviving spouse wants it, they get it because they're the priority. But they could look at the family holistically. This is an amazing opportunity to start mitigating income taxes, not just estate taxes.
Okay, interesting discussion. Trust for your spouse, the surviving spouse, making sure they're taken care of using the trust method. And Paul is an expert on this. People are intrigued by your ways here, Paul. How do people get in touch with you?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us. Would love for you to head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Always great stuff. The Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.